My name's Les. I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
By God's grace, the gift of this fellowship and people like you in rooms like this and opening statements like she made there, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink today. It's been going on since August the 20th, 1977, and I am really grateful for that. I'm really grateful for this. For you that didn't come eat, you missed a whole lot. If I go to sleep up here, think nothing of it. It's because I ate, and when I eat, I get sleepy. And if y'all that were out there, y'all go to sleep, I'll talk loud enough to try to keep you awake. It was a great meal. You missed it if you didn't come out there to where we had dinner tonight. And I really enjoyed it. There were several things about it I enjoyed. First, I didn't have to pay for it. That was the good part. The food was good anyhow, but I really loved it, you know. And the stories that was told, I kept quiet for a change, and I listened to the stories around. Boy, Don, you missed it. They told some good ones. I mean, Gene's husband can tell some stories. And then Dan can outdo him. I mean, you know. Not to mention Tim, he got in 2 or 3 motorcycle stories, and I thought there was a lot of drunks out there until I saw some Al-Anon sitting there. And I'm grateful y'all are all here. They told me not to walk by that table. It's dangerous. And you say you're gonna correct me when I tell a lie? We might as well go home now. Gosh, it's been good these last 3 weeks. It has really been my pleasure. I enjoy this probably. I'm really, as I told you last week, I'm living a dream. This is the dream of what I've wanted to do ever since I found out about sobriety and started being sober. And I've never asked to go anywhere. I've turned that over to God a long time ago and let God tend to that. He knows more about that than I do. And it is a dream, and it's to tell you how much I look forward to coming down here, you would have to get a kid to tell you what about the 1st of December, how he's looking forward to Christmas. Because that's exactly how much I've enjoyed this and how much I've looked forward to each meeting. And I always do, because this is this to me is the biggest miracle that has ever happened to people of mine and your ilk. This is a world thing. Bill Wilson, back at the turn of the century, was one of the 100 people that had done something that would make a big change in this whole world. And he was number 50. And it was because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And sometimes I don't think that I grasp or can possibly am gifted with enough sense to grasp what we really have here. Because this is a life-saving program. This is, you know, Bill Wilson one time went to talk, and he was talking to nothing but doctors, and I've got the speech he made at home on a tape. And Bill was they all went around and introduced themselves. I'm Dr. Williams. I'm a so and so and so and so and so. And there was about 50 of them. And he got to him, and he stood up and he said, "My name is Bill Wilson, and I'm a faith healer, currently unemployed." And I think that's what we are here. I think you and I are faith healers, because we talk to people about a program, about things that doesn't look like it would work for anything up there. And yet, tried by the individual and used by the individual and put in their life by the individual, marvelous and remarkable things happen. Because the book says the best years of our existence lies ahead. And that is so true with almost 26 years in this program, in this fellowship, and with a minimal of effort, I can truthfully say that this has been the best years of my life. If my life ends tonight, you know, it's okay. I mean, it's just this simple. I hear people say they don't want to die drunk. I don't want to live drunk anymore. I've had my drunk living, I hope. As far as up till today, I know that I don't ever want to be back where I used to be. Never, ever, ever do I want to visit that horrible, horrible thing that we call drunkenness, because it was so horrible. And so it was the greatest thing that happened. It had to be an omnipotence that took me to from there to here. It had to be a power that was so great, simply because, and it had to be a power that got this here for me and for you when we got here. The power that brought this to us when Bill Wilson wrote these 12 steps. And he started out, and he was, as you've heard me say, he wasn't in a very good mood. But and he wasn't very spiritual. But he said when he picked up the pen and wrote the first few letters, it seemed as if the pen took legs. And he just wrote and wrote and wrote until he had these 12 little steps written. And it had to be a power greater than herself that was there. And it was hard as I thought that when I first got here, you know, it was... Today I know that there is a power that comes inside of these rooms. Bill Wilson used to say that sometimes in an otherwise crazy world, the only place he can find that has any serenity at all is inside of an AA group. And I feel that. I feel it when I walk in the door of anywhere I'm at. If I'm in Kansas or if I'm in Colorado or if I'm in wherever I'm at or in Tyler, Texas or Kaufman, Texas where I live, walking in the rooms of the AA hall has got a calming effect that I've never felt anywhere else in my life. And it's because of the presence of something here that's not anywhere else. That's not anywhere else except in another AA hall. And not that we're so special, but I think we've been given a very special gift here. In fact, I know I have been given a very special gift because never in my lifetime was I able to do, be, see, and go and have what I have today. And it has been because of people like you, people in rooms like this, and the power of that big book and the power of that 12 and 12 and all of our literature that I could be here right now, that I'm supposed to be dead. I was pronounced dead three times in 77 and was in a coma and stayed in a coma for 3 days and I shouldn't even be able to stand up, let alone talk, let alone make any bit of sense at all. Nothing but the power greater than God, as good as God, could have done that. That's just that simple. But we talked about these 12 steps. We've talked about the first 10, the first 9 of them. And we've talked about getting right with God, getting right with ourselves, and getting right with our fellow man. And now we're going to talk about keeping it that way. To me, and I told you, you won't find this in any of our books, but I know that in my, the four things that I've got to do is get right with me, get right with God, get right with you, and keep it that way. To me, that's what this whole program's all about, and to keep it as simple as we possibly can. And we do that simply by taking these 12 steps and putting them in our life as a way of life. We don't do it one time and quit. We don't do it one time and we don't take the first step one time and that's it. We have to surrender so we can win. We have to find a way that we can get up every morning and ask God with His help that we won't take a drink and then go out and help Him make sure that doesn't happen that day. And we have to be dedicated to this. This is a dedication of... The word that got us all here was totally just nothing but desperation. You got here under desperation. I got here under desperation. That was the only thing that would bring me here was total desperation. And I have to be as desperate about my sobriety as I was about my drinking, because when I got here and I had nothing, and I'm talking about I was less than nothing. And there's people in this room that I know that was worse than I was when I got here, but. I hadn't killed anybody yet. I haven't done a lot of things yet, but I don't worry about them yet. It's them damn agains I don't want. They're the ones that bother me, the agains. I don't ever want to be where I was ever at. And I know I don't have to as long as I can put forth an effort to do whatever it takes, regardless, to put these 12 steps in my life as a way of life. Then I won't ever have to drink again. Drinking is not an... I never think about drinking. I hadn't thought about drinking in a long time. And that certainly wasn't anything I had anything to do with. This is the total gift, and we'll talk a lot about that gift tonight. But we have a saying at the Kaufman Groups, hang around until the miracle happens. And hang around until you see the miracle, and you'll see the gift. And once you see the gift, don't take your eye off of it. You never lose sight of the gift. Because there will be a gift come your way, and you'll know it when it is. And we will talk about that in a few minutes. But once we get through getting right with ourselves, and if you're just going through the steps the first time, and I've been going through them now all those days since I've been sober. I got up this morning, did the same thing I did when they first showed me how. I got up and I asked God with his help today that I wouldn't take a drink of anything containing alcohol. And I haven't been in any beer joints today, and I haven't been to a pool hall, and I didn't smoke any funny cigarettes. And I've done everything I could to try to help God make that happen. And I didn't do a lot of things I used to do because I had to change. I had to change playgrounds. I had to change playmates. Places I went, I don't go no more. And when I started getting right with that God and then started getting right with myself by taking that inventory, finding out what it was in me that caused me to drink alcohol and be the kind of person that I was, why was I so inconsiderate? Why was I so irresponsible? I was undependable except to do wrong. You knew I was going to mess up. That you could guarantee. And I had no respect for you. And I don't care who you was, man, woman, boy, girl. I had no respect for you because I didn't have any respect for me. Today I respect you, and I respect me, and I am respected. This is all of that is a gift. And where I live, I'm respected. Where I'm in business, I'm respected. And a lot of people don't like me. And I really could care less, you know, because that's not my job. If they don't like me, I'm sorry. But they do respect me, and they know I'll tell them the truth. And before you could be right opposite, you knew I'd tell you a lie, whatever it was about, because I would lie to you when the truth would have done better. But once I started getting right with me, and then God, and then with other people, then I had to do what y'all were telling me. And that was, you said, you got to do this one day at a time. And this is clearing away the wreckage of the future is most of the alcoholic's problem. We've done cleared away the wreckage of the past. We've gotten rid of that. Up here it says in the big book in step 12, this is thick. All of these things are fixing to be taken away. All the things we're going to talk about and do it, God will take them away. And once we get to here, then we start looking at that one day at a time. And I hear a lot of people out there talk about one day at a time. That's not in AA and not in any other 12-step program. But it's a good saying because one day at a time is all we can do it. And that's what step 10 is all about. Step 10 says, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly make excuses. No, promptly. Promptly admit it. Promptly admit it. That's my version of it, is promptly make excuses. Because that's what it's all about, taking another inventory. Taking an inventory. This is a program of action for people of reaction. But Bill Wilson said, the alcoholic reacts more abnormally than any other set of people he's ever known. And we do. We react to everything. We are one reaction waiting to happen. And that's what step 10 is basically, to me, is all about. No reaction. I don't care what you do. It says in there, it is a spiritual axiom that any time we are disturbed is from within us. That is one bitter pill to swallow. That it, no matter what's happening inside of us, it is inside of me. If I'm mad or if I'm upset or something, if you do something, it don't make no difference what you do. If I don't react to it, nothing happens. When I react, the dance starts. And that's the trouble with this is that we always react. We always have a reaction because we are a people that want to be right. And we have a saying in our house, call the library, because we're both drunks. And somebody's got to have the last word. You can wear a damn door hinge out, slamming it, getting the last word, I can tell you. Because I'm going to have the last. And we just, way back then, we decided when we got in a situation like that, the first thing, call the library. And that is, see who's right here. Well, the library don't know who's right about whether you had beans yesterday at dinner or whatnot, you know. But it's just a saying. Because we both have, and as I said last week, sometimes we people in Alcoholics Anonymous that are married to or living with or in love with an alcoholic, we think we're the only ones sick in our house. I get to thinking I'm the only sick person there is in my house, and then I watch her for a little while, and I realize, I keep thinking, what the hell's the matter with her? Why don't she do it? Oh, and then I think she's sick. She's an alcoholic. She's got every right, you know, and that's between her and her sponsor. It's not between me and her. She's got a year longer sobriety than I've got, which doesn't mean a whole lot, you know, and I don't mean it because it's her, but the fact is, it's what did we do today? Today is what we've got, and that's all we got. And we don't know what tomorrow brings. We don't know if we're going to have tomorrow night. But this is what this is all about, is taking an inventory as we go through the day to keep from having all of those upset feelings that we have. It's called a spot check inventory. And that is when we get a little irritated, we need to stop and take a step back and not react. We don't need to react. We need to step back and just let it run through our head, "Thy will, not mine, be done." And then you don't have any trouble. Because I have had it to happen to me time and time again, and I don't always do it. Sometimes I want to get right in the thick of there and prove I'm right. I got to be right, you know, because I'm right. But it's not that way. If I don't have to get upset over it. You know, have you been real mad since you've been sober and got real mad and screamed and hollered and kicked and slammed the door and cussed a little bit and then just sat down and just the whole, it's just like you, it's all drained out of you, and for the next 2 or 3 days you feel like you got a hangover? You've got an emotional hangover, because what we have here is a disease of the emotions. And that emotional hangover can come, and it can cause us to drink alcohol, because we can stay with it enough. It will get, I can get good and mad, and when I do, or whatever, jealousy, anger, greed, anything, get real, real upset over it. And it can just drag me down for 2 or 3 days, and I just kind of mope around and wonder what's the matter with me. And it's nothing but my emotions has been totally destroyed. And a good resentment can last a month or a year if we'll let it. And we like to get good and mad so we can, and it feels good for a minute or two, but it don't last long. And that's when we're, the same defects of character that kept me drunk 26 years ago today is the same defects of character I got today. Same ones. They never change. They're the same. They stay the same. But it's just the fact that today, I talked to God about them this morning, and I didn't have to exercise any of those things. It didn't have to come about. And if it had, I could have went further than that and not carried out and not reacted about it. Because if I don't react, there's nothing happens. And I don't get nervous and upset on the inside. And it will go away, it'll just smooth over. But it takes a long time to get there, and I'm not fully there yet. But the reaction, the emotional hangover can cause us to get drunk. And that's, people get mad or they get angry at something or greedy too much, and the next thing you know, they're drinking. Because that's our way of doing. Our job, we are supposed to be drunk. The alcoholic, that's our natural deal, is to be drunk. That's what we do, is drink. And that was my only answer for years and years. And it takes a long time to become accustomed to these answers. These answers don't come as easily as you think they do. They didn't for me, and they didn't for anybody I've ever sponsored. And the people that I sponsor today, they don't seem to come real easy too. And I remember when I was there, it takes a while, as we talked last week about learning how to live sober. Living sober is not something we just grasp onto. It takes a lot of diligence and it takes a lot of work. And this tenth step is, I have the biggest problem I have today is clearing away the wreckage of the future. I'm always thinking about what next week's going to be, and never mind this week. I mean, and I can't, today's Monday. I can't do Friday's deal today. I can't do nothing but today. This is all I got. And I make plans. Now, understand me. I've got a calendar, and I can tell you where I'm going to be for the next year and a half at any specific day, because I got it wrote down if I'm supposed to be somewhere. But that's okay. I had this plan. It's on my calendar, and I had this plan, and I came. But I didn't plan the outcome. And that's where I've always made the mistake. Is planning the outcome. And you have too. Because the alcoholic, we cannot stand to be disappointed. And we cannot stand anybody telling us what to do. So therefore, we set ourselves up by planning out what's going to happen Saturday. She's going to say this, and I'm going to say this, and we're going to do this. And Saturday comes, and she don't say this. And she said something else, and it didn't work right. And we're disappointed, so we're mad. She didn't cause that, or he didn't cause it. We caused it, because we set ourselves up for it. We plan. Leave the outcome to God. That's the whole thing I'm trying to make a point of. Is I make plans to go to wherever it is I'm going to go. And I put forth the effort to get there. And how it comes out is in God's hands. It's not in Leslie's hands. The times that I want it to come out the way I want it to, it never is. It's messed up the whole time. Because it just doesn't work. And that's why this 10th step is so terribly important, is the fact that we start taking care of it today, just one day at a time. And yeah, I will think about Friday or something. And I'm in a family deal right now, and you know how family is. And this is involving a ton of money and a lot of land and everything else, and I'm one of the heirs in it. And we're having trouble with it. And it is without a doubt, I'm looking forward to when we get through with it. Never mind the money. I'm tired of arguing, and I'm tired of, you know, it's just such a battle, and it's creating so much stuff. And the only way I can do it is with this program right here, and not look at tomorrow, not worry about what we're going to do about it Friday. And we've got a deadline on it, which is the 12th of this month. Oh well, and we've got 1,000 acres of land sold at a big bunch of money, and the guy has got the money ready to pay for it. And if we don't do it by the 12th, then it ain't going to be. Well, that's just got to be turned over to God, and I've got to do that in the 10th step every day. I've got to know that just today is all I can do, and do what I can today. And I'm just as powerless over that as I am alcohol. I'm as powerless over what those attorneys are going to do and how they're going to fit. I don't know, and don't care. It's not my job. But if I don't watch myself, I'll be letting today. You know, the alcoholic is always looking ahead or behind one. Well, I've never seen an alcoholic that was coming from anywhere. Well, how you been? Well, I'm going to Dallas. I'm going to Houston. Hell, they never just come from Longview. No, I'm going. We've always been going somewhere. And the fact is, we don't take time to look at today. We're so interested in what we're going to do that we need to stop and find out what's happening today. Because today is the day that we can stay sober. The day that we can put this all in perspective. Oh, I tell this story, and I've got a little business that's, I would say the room is 30 foot long, I don't know. But I have a barbershop, and it's I've been in the same place for 26 years now nearly, and everybody knows me, and I know everybody nearly. And it was a long time ago. It's been 4 or 5 years ago, and I think I've told you all this, but there was this little guy coming to my place one Tuesday morning. Tuesday is a huge day for me. I'm off on Monday, and I work real hard on Tuesday. And have for years. And this morning, that Tuesday morning some years ago, this old man came in, and he had just lost two brothers from a disease they called alcoholism that year. And he had told me several times he hadn't had a drink in 8 years. And he was pouring it on his head, I guess, because I could smell it. And I felt like that's okay. That's what the man's doing and whatever. But I wasn't going to discourage him. But he was sitting over, and he came in, and he sat down, and he was cursing me. And there was about 6 people in there ahead of him, and he was cursing me under his breath. And he was questioning my ancestry and saying a lot of stuff, just mumbling to his. And I just kind of looked at him, you know, and I didn't say anything. And so when it come his time, he come got in my chair, and I walked over to the coffee pot, which was about 30 feet out there. On the other wall, and picked up a cup of coffee. And I turned around and looked at a highway out there. It's Highway 30, 31, and it's 4-lane. It's a lot of people going up and down it, and it was a beautiful day. And I just commented, isn't this a nice day today? Gosh, it's pretty. Well, he told me in so many words that he didn't come in there to get no so-and-so weather forecast. He come in there to get a so-and-so haircut, and on he went. And I did what I had never done before. I just stood there and looked out the window, and I said, God, in my head, thy will not mine be done, about 3 times real fast. And I walked over, and I set the cup of coffee down. I wrapped him up and asked him how he was doing, and he was mumbling. And I went ahead and cut his hair. I didn't pour the coffee on him. I didn't tell him what he could do with all his stories. I didn't do the things. It wasn't me that's so good. No, because my idea was to pour the coffee on him, snatch the rag off of him, and tell him what he could do with his haircuts from here from now on. But I didn't. But if I had, I'd have got shaky and I got nervous. And I didn't. I didn't get nervous all that day because I didn't react to him. Well, the next Friday, I'm getting ready to go to work and my phone ain't ringing. And I'm mad because my phone ain't ringing because I do a lot of phoning. You know, and I like to call out and I like to have people to call me. And I'm talking to a lot of alcoholics every day. And I couldn't, the phone was broke, so I headed out over to the, across the street to a business over there to call in. I had my cell phone out in the car, didn't even think about it. But I ran across there, and as I did, I saw that guy walking, and he was walking. I thought, he ain't coming back today, not two haircuts in 1 week, I can't stand it. I mean, I ain't this strong. So the man literally, as I was over there, he was in here, and all of a sudden some more people came in right behind him. One woman, and she had three mentally challenged people with her, two women and one guy, and I've been cutting her hair for years. And hollered at them just going in. And I went over there and called them to get my phone put on, and they told me to be on a couple of hours and all that stuff. And I came back, and there sat that old man, sitting in the same place he was sitting at last week, and he was mumbling. Well, I just walked over and got him a cup of coffee and set it down in front of him. And he told me, thank you. He drank the coffee, and about that time, he jumped up, and he ran outside. And he stood at the curb out there, and he peed out on the street. And I looked at that woman and those three people that were mentally challenged. I didn't want those girls to see that. I don't know why. I mean, that's not the thing you see, you know. I mean, I just felt that way, and I just felt so bad. And he turned around and come back in, sat down. And I said, I'll carry you home just as soon as I get through with them. Just have a seat. He said, okay, thank you. Well, about that time, the police come sliding up to my door. Siren and all. If you come peeing on my street down there, baby, you're going to get called. They had three people to call about that poor little old man. And the policeman came in and he said, Les, I want to see that guy right there. I said, go ahead. They went out and talked and come back. He said, and the policeman said, Les, he said, you was going to carry him home. I said, you go ahead and carry him. I said, I got stuff to do. So he carried him home. The next Wednesday, his next door neighbor came to see me. A little lady. A little lady that I had known for a long time. I'd been out to her house and cut her husband's hair a jillion times before he passed away. And she said, I don't guess you've heard about Mr. So-and-so, have you? I said, no. She said, well, last night he went totally crazy and took a sledgehammer and beat his car plumb to the ground and beat his house all up. And they finally came and arrested him about 12:30 and took him to Terrell. Said he's totally lost his mind. How would I have felt if I had poured coffee on a man that had gone crazy and I didn't even know it? How would I have felt if he hadn't gone crazy? What I'm saying is, this is a protective device that this 10th step gives me. If I'll tend to it, I don't have to go through all that misery that I always went through, and I don't have to react. And sometimes I still react. Certainly I do, because I'm human. And we're not going to be, you know, that's why they put erasers on pencils, because we make mistakes. If we never made a mistake, we could write with either end of the pencil. We just pick it up and go to writing. But the pencils has got eraser on it because people make mistakes. And on this this one day at a time thing, I need to take an inventory when I get through every afternoon and talk to myself about how did I do today. I ask this question, and I don't want anybody to think this is an ego-serving question either. But you see, when everybody that's in here that's an alcoholic, there's a lot of people know that you're an alcoholic, and they know you're an AA. And they know I'm in AA. In that little town, everybody knows whether you use White Cloud or Aurora. You know, I mean, for God's sakes. Everybody knows I'm a drunk. And it hadn't been in the paper or anything, but they just know it. But I ask myself every day in the 10th step, what would happen to AA if everybody acted like I did today? Because, you see, this is my whole life right here in rooms like this. My whole life is decided on what I hear in here and what I say in here and what I do in here, because my life depends upon y'all being here for me and me being here for you. This is what this whole thing is about. And if some old boy is out there wanting to get sober and he sees me acting a fool like I am capable of doing and can at any minute, and he'll say, he's in AA. I don't want that. If that's what AA is all about, I don't want it. And I ask myself, and it's not ego because I'm me. It's me because I'm a drunk. And I ask because I won't see. If we may be the only copy of the big book somebody ever sees today. And we need to see what that big book's going to look like to them. And I'm very interested in that. And so I take an inventory every afternoon. I took an inventory on the way down here today of my day-to-day. And it was reasonably good for me. I mean, you know, I didn't get an A+. But I probably would have judged me that way. But God would have said, we'll settle for a C-, you know. But the fact is, I didn't hurt nobody today. I didn't steal anything today. I didn't take a drink today. I didn't want a drink today. And I talked to 3 or 4 drunks today about not taking a drink this morning with some of the people I sponsor and some of the things that's gone on, you know. And I got the opportunity to do a little something that I very seldom ever get to do. But with taking that inventory on a day-to-day basis and checking ourselves out, maybe we can look at the defects of characters we've got now and bring 6 and 7 back in our life. And I try to do this every day. I bring 6 and 7 back in the afternoon. When I take that inventory, I learn to pray in my car. I still pray a lot in my car. I head out from my place of business and I head home, which is a 40-mile drive, and I start taking my inventory when I get out of my driveway, looking at me and seeing what did I do today. Do I owe anybody any amends? Promptly admit it. That's what that means. Do I need to tell somebody I'm sorry about how I acted today to them? Or do I owe, you know, what have I done today? And I look it over and check it out. And then I take it and put it in 6 and 7 and take another 6 and 7 and ask God to help me with whatever it is that bothered me today. And then bring it up again in the morning for the next 24 hours. Because I don't want to repeat the mistakes I made today, tomorrow. Sometimes I do. Because ego is always in there. My ego is always ever present in my inventory. Because and it's better than it's ever been, which you probably can't imagine what that was about 25 years ago, if this is the best it is. But step 10, when we get to step 10 and we look at this and we think about take those spot check inventories through the day, then we get to the end of the day and we look and honestly ask ourselves, and if you had a bad day, and there's a lot of it, we have bad days. Like I said before, I used to have bad years. And then it got down to bad months and then bad weeks. And now every now and then I have a bad day. Well, don't beat yourself up over it. You're human. Take it for what it's worth. Did you have good intentions when you got up this morning? When you asked God this morning, was your intentions good? If you had good intentions, probably better than you ever had in your life when you was drinking. Because I had no intentions at all worth a quarter when I was drinking. So take those good intentions and build on them. Don't beat yourself up just because you had a bad day. Start right then and start fixing up for the next 24 hours. You can start it anytime you want to. You don't have to start it early in the morning. You can start it again. You can restart that afternoon or at the middle of the day when you realize it's going bad. You can stop it right then by just asking God with His help that you won't take a drink and help me with these problems. And call your spot. You know, this is where people get drunk during these dry drunks, we call them. And I don't think we ever discuss this enough in AA. Dry drunks or the dry drunk syndrome is when the grocery line's going too slow, the people are driving too bad, too fast, and everybody's but you's doing wrong, and everything is wrong, and you're just in a total got your steering wheel and road rage is everywhere, and it's all them and not you. That's a dry drunk. And we're nothing. We see nothing good. We're all looking at negativism, negativism, negativism. There's some things we need to do in that, and that's pray about twice as hard and twice as much as you prayed. You've been praying. Call your sponsor 2 or 3 times that day and talk to him, and really tell him what you're doing or her, and read the big book a little bit more, and do a lot of things. And all of a sudden it'll shake. And then start make a little gratitude list if you want to. And put down some things that you take for granted. And all of a sudden you'll see that you ain't as bad as you thought you was. Remember, trying to compare today with the day you quit drinking. Just think, because if you forgot it, you ain't had it yet. You know, they tell me, if you forgot your last drunk, you ain't had it yet. And I ain't forgot mine. I remember it as if it was yesterday. And I remember, I want to compare today with then if I'm feeling real bad. And it's still, no matter how bad it gets now, it ain't going to get that bad no more unless I take a train. That's the only way it could ever get that bad again. But we get to step 11. And it says, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. Praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and power to carry that out. The knowledge of His will for us. Through prayer and meditation. I half measure this step to death. I pray a lot. I don't meditate much. But when I do meditate, and I do pray, and I take it and put it with that inventory I made in step 10 yesterday afternoon or this morning, I've got a foundation that's unshakable for that day. And it takes just such a short time, and it takes no whole lot of effort, but just a little bit. And when I first done it, I wasn't sincere about it because it wasn't going to work anyhow. But I see now that something's happened during this 25 years and 11 months and 7 days. Something's come about, and I guess that's what it is. Because I learned how to pray in step 11. The prayer of St. Francis of Assisi says, help me to understand instead of be understood. I need to know, and everybody needs to know, especially with the family. They're not ever going to understand you. You don't even understand yourself. How can they? If they hadn't been where you've been, they cannot understand why you did the things you did. Pray for that. Help me to understand instead of be understood. Help me to love instead of be loved. Help me be a channel of thy peace. Help me bring happiness where there's sorrow. Help me bring smiles where there's frowns. Help me bring laughter where there's tears. And on it goes. And the very last words is, thy will, not mine, be done. I spent my early days in my lifetime going to the church every Wednesday and every Sunday morning and every Sunday night. And every revival that they had and everything else, I was there because Mother and Daddy made me go. I know good and well that they said it, and I never heard it because there's a lot of things happen between y'all's mouth and my ear. I don't know what it is, but I didn't hear it then. But thy will, not mine, be done. When I first heard that in Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought, my God, what a novel idea. And then come to find out, I've been to church several times since then, and they're saying it now. They've learned. I guess we've taught them. I don't know. I knew we'd have influence on them if they'd just listen to us. But sure enough, thy will not mine be done. That's what it said. Praying only for the knowledge. And we talked about it in the seventh step, in the humility step, about the basic ingredient of all humility is the desire to seek in God's will, seek and do God's will. And that seems to me like that we're talking here about we're not ever going to have any fun anymore. Because we're going to have to, we're going to set ourselves up for, I have more fun now than I've ever had in my whole life. I have more fun everywhere I go than I've ever had in my life. And I don't have to do the things I used to do. And the fact is, it was in the big book, it says, we strive for progress, not for perfection. There's nobody, well, a couple of us, but nobody, have been perfect, Oh, well, maybe Don, We'll let him go. But, everybody knows him. You know how good he is. Do I have to say any more? But the fact remains that the fun that we have, and the more I pray and the more I meditate. Meditating is when I'm listening. And we've got enough meditation. My wife is a book freak. She buys a book on everything. And meditation, she went crazy over. We've got one whole bookcase full of and I know the third page ain't been turned on any of them. But that's neither here nor there. That's her deal, not mine. But meditating is when I'm listening, And I don't listen good. When I shut my mouth, my brain's like a shotgun. It's just scattering, And I have found a way to eliminate that. And I have had people make fun of me because I say this, and I really don't care. Because this is my life and I'm trying to save it. But I said this at my group the other night. And they talked about it Saturday night. Here comes this old guy that does this. I shut my eyes, and I don't do this when I'm driving now. You know, I told you I learned it. I'm sitting still. But I close my eyes, and I picture a rosebud, brand new rosebud. And I think about thy will, and I watch in my mind that rosebud open. And I watch it come to fruition to be a full rose. And you know, when I do that and have my little prayer, I have a good day. I mean, you can't do anything that it's going to mess me up that day. But it's like somebody had, Jane's wife asked me tonight, said, Jean's husband asked me today, said, how do you stay so slim? Do you exercise? I said, well, hell yes, I exercise. I bat my eye and I jump to conclusions. that's the only exercise I get, you know. But the things that we do, the little bitty things that we do, is what's going to keep us where we don't have to run to that liquor store and get hit by a beer truck on the way. And I just couldn't. You know, we have got those 147 promises in the big book, and we've got the 12 that we talk about so much after in the middle of the 10th step. I mean, in the middle of the 9th step, that says the 11th promise says we will intuitively know how to handle situations that once before baffled us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations. I guess we don't have problems anymore. We have situations. I have some things happen every now and then. They resemble a problem, but I take them as situations. But that's what this is all about. It says, and his will to power to carry that out, the knowledge of his will. And, you know, I know what intuition is. Intuitively means I feel it. I mean, I know it intuitively. I will intuitively know, and that is God talking to me. I intuitively know, and it ain't a voice. But I know when I'm fixing to do something wrong. And I know I'll get a feeling, so I just move away from it. My wife calls it following your vibes. I just, many years ago, we had matching cars. And I was driving down the road one day and saw a car that I liked better than my car. Wheeled in, told the man I wanted to buy the car. He said, no, you don't. No, you don't want the car. I said, yes, I do. I love it. See, I'm colorblind. And to me, it looked real pretty. And it was real pretty. They said it was pretty. But he said, you don't want it. It's not as good a car as you got right there. I said, well, let me drive it anyhow. And I'm driving it, and I drove it around about 8 blocks. And all the time, I've got this voice said, don't do it. Leave the car alone. Listen to the man. I pulled up there, and I said, I want to trade. I bought the car. Worst automobile I've ever owned in my life. Trust me, none, bar none. That I was hearing it. My vibes were still. That was the intuition. That is a gift. That's the way God talks to me, is through my intuit. My intuition it works all the time. It's up to me to listen to it and see what it intuitively tells me not to do or intuitively says go ahead on. And that's this whole thing is, thy will not mine be done. And if I can live by that. And, you know, we talked about happiness. Happiness is not getting what you want. Happiness is wanting what you got. And that's, to me, that's what it is. Being happy with what I've got today. And to say that I'm that way, yeah, most of the days I am. Some days I'm not. And when I'm not, I'm questioning, you know, who knows more than me, you know. And that's the days that I don't do real well. But if I'm happy and trying to do God's will, then I got a chance. And if I don't, I hadn't. Then we get down to here to having had a spiritual awakening as the, not as a, as the results of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. We tried to carry this message, having had a spiritual awakening. Spiritual awakening is one of the most marvelous things that the alcoholic can look for. And a lot of people start looking for it early on, and they're looking for it so hard it just passes them right on by. But, you know, and they don't really realize it. They just, I don't know what causes it, but people are, it's like a kid said in my group the other night. He said, He said, somebody said they had seen a burning bush. He said, God, I'm glad I didn't see a burning bush. He said, the next day I'd have wanted to see two. And that's the very thing that we're all about. We'd have to have a burning bush 4 or 5 times a week, you know. I mean, that's not what it's about. I didn't see a burning bush, but I got that intuition that it would be okay. And this is what it is. Maybe there are many definitions of spiritual awakenings, as there are people who have had them. But certainly each genuine one has something in common with all the others. And these things which they have in common are not too hard to understand. Pardon me. When a man or a woman has a spiritual awakening, the most important meaning of it is that he has now become able to do, feel, and believe that which he could not do before on his unaided strength and resources alone. He has been granted a gift which amounts to a new state of consciousness and being. He has been set on a path which tells him he's really going somewhere, that life is not a dead end, not something to be endured or mastered. In a very real sense, he has been transformed because he has laid hold of a source of strength which, in one way or the other, he had hitherto denied himself. He finds himself in a possession of a degree of honesty, tolerance, and unselfishness, peace of mind, and love of which he had thought himself quite incapable. What he has received is a free gift, and yet usually, at least in some small part of it, he has made himself ready to receive it. AA's manner of making ready to receive this gift lies in the practice of the 12 steps of our program. Bill Wilson said, if the gifts are going to keep coming, the spiritual awakenings have to keep happening. To me, I consider this not a spiritual, this is a spiritual experience. Being able to talk about it, being able to get to talk about it, being able to live this life, being able to see the people out here that I know and love so much that are coming back and that just are coming back. I see two of them right here at this table right here that I've loved ever since the day I met them. My heart has been happy because I saw them when we got here, because that just makes me know. And all of you that I do know that hadn't been nowhere, you make me happy too, because you see, it's controlled. It says to me, it still works. It's still working. But the spiritual experiences must keep happening if the gifts are going to keep coming. And the gifts that we've been given here are so much, you know, you can't even write them down. I can't even talk about them. I can't even think about them, because it all comes from the very second line, third line of that thing. It says, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics. This message. That's our job. We've all got a job in Alcoholics Anonymous. You're carrying your message to me tonight by being here and being sober. The message I'm carrying is the way I do this. And everybody's got a job here. It doesn't matter what it is. And none's no more important than the other one. Just being here. Shaking somebody's hand, shaking a new man or woman's hand, asking them if they can be of help, doing something for somebody else and not expecting to get nothing out of it. Because the rewards that you get are so great. It's kind of like wetting in your pants with dark clothes on, you know. You'll get a warm feeling, but nobody won't know anything about it, you know. I mean, Because it's kind of the way it just, when you do something and you turn around and you don't expect nothing, because we've all expected so much for so little done. I always would do anything in the world for you, but I wanted a whole lot coming back. And today that's not necessary. It doesn't have to be that way. And it doesn't, the big book has got the word others in there 13 times. And that ain't talking about others being other alcoholics. It's talking about them others out there doing something for them, because I didn't steal from y'all. Y'all was doing the same thing. Y'all could see my tricks. It was them people that couldn't see my tricks I was going to fool with, and them. So my others is out there. I need to do something for somebody occasionally, and maybe every day, and not get caught at it. Of course, I got to tell somebody every time I do something good. So I got to brag about it. Of course, then it's ineffective, you know. But because I want you to know how good I am. But the fact is just this, and no more. If we don't carry the message, nobody will hear it. If nobody said anything about it, we would never be here. I wouldn't be here, and you wouldn't either. And I tell this story, I'll tell it again, about the guy, my friend that I've got in Cincinnati. He's got 3 more months than I've got. His name's Fred. And Fred does a lot of going, a lot of doing, a lot of working in AA. One night Fred was at his AA group. He was standing there talking to one of his sponsees, and the phone rang. Somebody picked it up and said, "Yeah, wait a minute, I'll see." I said, "Fred, you want to run down to the Fleabag Motel, talk to a drunk down there?" He said, yeah, we got time, got an hour. Well, and so he took the guy, and away they went down to Fleabag Motel, got down there, and the woman said, "Are y'all from AA?" And she said, "Yes." I said, "Well, I didn't know what to do." I said, "I sure hate to bother y'all and calling you, but this guy's been here 3 weeks, and he's been drunk for 3 weeks, and he's shaking. He ain't able to go to no meeting or nothing, but he sure does need some attention." Fred said, "Don't worry about bothering us. You didn't bother us." I said, "Where's he at?" She said, "Down in room 4. Fred and his buddy walked down there, and there he was, laying on the bed. They did it right out of the big book, told him just exactly what had happened to them, how they used to be, and what they were like now. Talked till about 15 to 8 and said, "Listen, we got to go. We got to go to a meeting. You're not able to go. But I'm going to leave you some money up here, and this lady will buy you something to eat in the morning. You ain't going to get the money, but you're going to get something to eat. And you take that, and she's going to bring you some eggs in the morning and everything. Tomorrow night, and any time tomorrow, if you want to call me on that number there, my home number, you can call me. And I'll try to talk you out of taking that drink, because I want to come back here tomorrow and get you and take you to a meeting." And he agreed, and he handed him a card. They walked off, went on to their meeting. The next night, they got to their group pretty early, just like they always did, getting ready to go down and pick the old dude up. And about that time, a little guy walked in the door. Nobody knew him. He walked up to this woman and said, "Who is this guy?" She said, "That's Fred, right over here in that gray suit." He walked over and stuck it up in his face and said, "Is this you?" Fred looked at him and said, "Yeah, that's me. Why, do I know you? Where'd you get my card?" He said, "Well, wasn't you down at the Fleabag Motel last night?" He said, "Yeah, I sure was." He said, "But you're not the guy that's on the bed." He said, "No, but I was the guy that was under the bed." You see, whatever happens, and we don't know what happened to the guy that's on the bed. We ain't never heard from him no more. But the guy that's under the bed ain't drank yet. If he has, I hadn't heard about it in the last couple of 3 months. What I'm saying is, somebody heard it, and there wasn't even talking to him. But somebody heard it that needed to hear it. And if we don't say it, and that's your job, and that's my job, shaking hands with the newcomer, shaking hands with the old-timer. Us old-timers need love, too, you know. And do something that you'd like to have done to yourself. Because remember the days when you came in here and how lonesome you were. Because there's no disease in the world that's as lonesome as alcoholism. And I can assure you that if you take these 12 steps and put them in your life as a way of life, that the day will come when there ain't going to be no loneliness. And you're going to love every minute of it, because it will be something to do constantly. And it will be another drunk calling you. And you never get tired of it, because you know that if you don't do that, the drunkenness may come your way. And that's not the way this is supposed to be. And it won't be if everybody does that. And carry and practice these principles in all of our affairs. That's where we talk about people looking at us and people knowing that we're in Alcoholics Anonymous or knowing that we're sober. Practice them in everywhere you go. It ain't hard in here. We can keep it. This hour sober's fine. Getting out there in them other 23 hours is kind of rough sometimes. That's where we need to practice it. In the restaurant, on the highway, at home, anywhere we're at, we need to be putting these 12 steps in our life as the best of our ability. I was going to read a part out of the big book tonight, but I can't do it because I'd cry if I did, and I don't want you to see me cry. I'll just say what I'm going to say. Read the last paragraph of the big book on page 164. And at the last sentence, and it says, "As we trudge the road to happy destiny." Trudge means to travel with great difficulty. And sometimes we have to have great difficulty. We have to travel it, but it's well worth the fact. If you'll do what that last paragraph says, along with those other 164 pages. And if you're new here and you don't think Alcoholics Anonymous will work, try it. If you don't think God will help you, ask. Because you see, I thank God that I found Alcoholics Anonymous. But more than that, I thank Alcoholics Anonymous that I found my God. I love each and every one of you, and God bless you. Thank you so much.